Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Glad to be with you today. It is Wednesday, November 13th. We're continuing our conversations with veterans this week, and thanks to our veterans for their service. Today's special topic are women veterans. Yesterday we got to talk with one of our female veterans, but today we're going to talk with a couple more, and looking forward to the conversations. Quite often we forget that women serve in a variety of ways to serve others, to protect freedom and peace, and to serve in a variety of ways in our military and armed forces. So we're going to talk with them here in just a little bit. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so here in the St. Louis area. The number is 314-821-0850. Outside of St. Louis, 1-800-730-2727. Or you can email your questions to family@kfuo.org. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting our program. If you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org, look for the sponsor section, and then click on the CUW logo in the sponsor section. That'll take you to their page. You can find out all about the great programs they have to offer and the locations where CUW is available. Go check it out, kfuo.org. And a special happy birthday to Rachel Asbury in the LCMS, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod President's Office today. I hope that you're out enjoying a great birthday day with this beautiful weather today. So God's blessings to you on your birthday today. Joining me in studio today, what a blessing to have joining us, Lori May. Welcome, Lori.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being here. Now, this is your radio debut, isn't it?
I believe it is my radio debut, yes.
Well, thanks for stepping out of the office and spending some time with us today to talk about your career in the military. I was reading through your biography, and just what a story, man. I decided we need to call this segment From Missiles to Mercy, just looking at your work. Tell us a little bit about what drew you to... you were in the Air Force, correct?
That's right.
And you've since retired from the Air Force. Now you're serving here at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod as an administrative assistant to the Associate Executive Director of the,
Mercy Operations.
Mercy Operations. I was going to say Operations of Mercy, but thank you. So you serve here at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. So you went from missiles to mercy. What drew you to the Air Force?
Well, I actually joined the Air Force because I knew I wanted to go to law school. So that was a way to make sure that I had funding to attend law school.
It was a means to get there.
Yeah.
And as you started looking into that career, any discouragement as a woman thinking about a career in the Air Force?
Well, I did just my first day walking into a recruiting station. You know, I told the guy that I've graduated from college and I'd like to join the Air Force. And he had some interesting questions like, are you married? You know, are you going to have a baby soon? a little bit of curiosity on his part.
Sure.
But no real, no discouragement from family or anything. They were curious, you know, how did you, what made you think about doing this? But there were some great scholarship opportunities that really drew me toward that idea.
So the incentive of the scholarship and support for your studies is mm-hmm. really what drew you. And you wanted to study law. What was it that drew you to law?
You know, I think just a way to help people and just a strong sense, a desire to see justice done in the world.
Okay. To see justice and to help others. So you joined the Air Force. When was it that you joined the Air Force?
It was in 1989.
A good year.
Yes, a very good year.
So you joined the Air Force. Where did you go first?
My training was done in San Antonio. So I got to spend some hot months in Texas.
What's the fort there? I'm trying to remember the name of it.
Well, I was at an annex to Lackland Air Force
okay.
Base. So Lackland is
That's
where they do the
thinking.
Big training.
Yeah. Right. So you were, an annex to Lackland. And mm-hmm. how did training go?
It went really well. They didn't let you sleep very much, you know, that was probably my big complaint.
So it's like having children.
It is. It's like, you know, you jump from being in college and having, you know, kind of your own schedule to every moment of your day scheduled. So it is like having kids.
Some similarities. Now, you went through training. What did that training entail?
Well, there was a physical component to mm-hmm. it. There were also academics and a lot of teamwork exercises, some leadership building exercises as well that were sort of part and parcel of that teamwork. And then there's also just the the discipline. You know, this is how you will fold your socks and underwear and put them in your drawer. And this is how clean your room needs to be.
So again, like having children. So the training is certainly the physical aspect and lifestyle aspect. But what about any academic or studies?
There were. There were some studies in history and a little bit of military theory and a lot of who does what in the Air Force, you know, so that when you get out of there, you understand who you go see if you have this type of issue. And yeah.
So after that initial training, where did you go from there?
So my missile training was in Vandenberg Air Force Base in California.
Missile training.
Missile training, yes. I was a missile combat crew commander at one point in my life.
And what was unique about that? You were one of the few women in that, correct?
Yes. Women had been in missiles for a few years by that point, but the living accommodations in the Minuteman missile system, you know, you're going to go into a hole in the ground. It's about 60 feet underground. There are two of you. You're going to go down at about 10 o'clock one morning and stay there until about 10 o'clock the next day. And
oh my,
there's a cot and a little bathroom that has a heavy shower curtain that you pull around it, you know, and it's really cozy.
Cozy. Quaint.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of, is it like a bunker?
Well, it is. It's down, you know, underground for protection. Mm-hmm. I suppose with today's modern weapon system, that protection is even more laughable than it was, you know, in the 90s when I was there. But that was the original theory. But
wow. And so this training was to help you prepare for what?
Well, I mean, you have to be prepared to handle emergencies when you're down underground. Mm-hmm. I actually did have one fire in the capsule system when I was there.
Oh, so, my.
And we safely put it out and climbed the ladder to get upstairs. And I think we were the Strategic Air Command Crew of the Month nominees for that. So,
wow.
Yeah.
What else does missile training include that you can tell us?
Well, there are just a lot of checklists to follow. Mm-hmm. There's a daily process of just checking out every important piece of equipment in the room and checking out all your communication systems. So, mm-hmm. you know, just like people do here before you get on the radio, make sure it all works.
That's right. And, you know, and if I forget to do something, if I fail to do it, perhaps our signal isn't as strong or the wrong music or promotional piece plays at the wrong time. Now, if you miss something on the checklist, what happens?
Well,
what are the risks?
I think the real risks were people's time would be wasted making repairs and the potential cost to the taxpayers of fixing an expensive piece of equipment. Mm-hmm. The risk of an accidental launch are very tightly controlled. So that was not a real fear you had as a crew member. But you did have an expectation that things would be done right every day, every time.
So from missiles then, you moved on. What came after missiles?
Well, I attended law school in Colorado, and that was through an Air Force program. They actually kept me on active duty and sent me to law school for 3 years. And so I married while I was at my missile base. And
so you became Mrs. Missiles.
Yes, I did. I married my husband, and then after we got married, he knew I was interested in law school and knew the time commitment that would involve, you know, 3 years trying to be in the same location. So he actually went into missiles so that he would be there in the local area and not be subject to moving anytime.
So he was in the Air Force as well.
He was, yes. He was in my very first squadron.
So you met him in the Air Force.
So while there were women in missiles when I started, my friend Kathy and I were the first two women going into the last all-male missile squadron in the Air Force.
Wow.
So we ruined the party for some guys, I think.
A marriage made in missiles. I think maybe that's the new name for the segment today. So from missiles, you went into law school. and while you were still on active duty. And from what I understand, when it comes to the U.S. Air Force and academics, they really do support education. And it sounds like there's a lot of opportunities for education when in the Air Force.
They really do. Actually, even in missile training, they had a program where they paid 100% of your expenses for your master's degree, because they're going to send you 24 hours at a time. So you sit underground and they'd like to know you're doing something useful with the spare time you have. So they encouraged academic studies.
Underground.
Yes. Because somebody had to be awake at 2 o'clock in the morning. And what better way to stay awake than reading a textbook?
On law, of all things. Oh, a law textbook at 2 in the morning.
Yeah, actually, it was public administration that I studied when I was in missiles.
But even more engaging, I'm sure.
Exactly.
So you're in law school, you study law, and have the opportunity to earn a degree and do so. What comes of that?
You know, I really, from the time I was in law school, I knew that in the Air Force, as an attorney, is really the only attorney job that I wanted right away. Mm-hmm. So I was very committed to staying in the Air Force as long as possible to enjoy that opportunity as a JAG, a judge advocate. And it presented a lot of great challenges. And it was very much interactive with a lot of the other positions on the Air Force base. So you got to know the commanders who were in charge of different units, and you helped them out with, you know, potential legal issues, limiting liability, and also dealing with personnel issues.
So a JAG, it sounds like a really prestigious title. Judge advocate, you've given us an idea of what that entails. Anything else about what a JAG does?
Well, one of the major parts of the job is having troops, before they deploy, get all their legal affairs in order. So you want to make sure you're able to do a will, and a living will, or whatever advanced directives people might have in mind. You want them to have things at home taken care of, so as they go to a deployment location, they're not worried about something they should have done before they departed home.
Mm-hmm. And at that time, we didn't necessarily have all the resources we have on the internet and things like that. That, you know, you can click here, click there, fill out this form, and.
Right.
And so it probably took a little bit more time to do those things as well.
Yeah, it was a little more time consuming, but computers have made it a much sure. easier process.
And that I can see now how that brings us back to your original desire to study law, to help other people, you know, help them get things, get their house in order before they go to serve, you know, being deployed and serving elsewhere. So you served as a JAG, and then from there, where did things go?
Well, we actually started a family, and our next assignment was in California. And so we went to California with our first daughter, and we left with 3 girls. And so we really got to enjoy, you know, time on the beach with little kids and dogs. And it was a great place to live with small kids.
Now, was this your assignment or your husband's assignment or both?
We were both assigned there. So that's one of the things you give up when you're married to another military member. You kind of give up the dream job for me idea. Mm-hmm. And you really think, what's the best location for the two of us to get good jobs together? So that was a key to making it work.
And that, not that church work and the military are, you know, the same, but there are some similarities too when going into church work. Sometimes when church workers marry a church worker, a pastor, a deaconess, DCE teacher, that sort of thing, sometimes you don't always end up in the ideal match, but certainly some great matches, you know, settings, maybe a teacher and a pastor, that sort of thing. So I'm sure our church workers can relate to that example as well.
Exactly. And I think just viewing it as an adventure that you're taking on together is probably the healthiest way to go into that.
And thanks for bringing that into the conversation. Married life as military, both being in the military. What about that? You know, tell us your thoughts on both husband and wife serving in the military.
Well, my husband and I had a pretty good combination of jobs. There were years when I really had to be at work later hours than he did. And he would pick up, you know, whatever extra stuff he could do to help. If it was getting the girls picked up from daycare and getting dinner started, he's fantastic at all that stuff. So,
so he was he not only was in missiles, but Mr. Mom at home and doing all those fatherly duties at home too.
Yeah, he did.
Without that, would it work?
I don't think I could have been effective. Mm-hmm. You know, I could have, you can do both things, but to be effective, Adam, you really need some help.
Sure.
And I actually, based on the scholarship opportunity that I was given, as soon as I agreed to go to law school, I knew that not only was I going to be there for 3 years, but I had to pay back mm-hmm. 6 years of service after
wow.
getting that law degree finished.
But that's reasonable. So, yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, it has put us in such a great position right mm-hmm. now. My family is able to be here in St. Louis. My husband's attending the seminary on GI Bill benefits.
Wow.
And, you know, we're in a position where because I couldn't leave uh-huh. the Air Force, even if I had wanted to, we're both retired from the military. So it makes being here and him, you know, taking 4 years off of work to go to school possible.
Sure, sure. So then the family transitioned then here to St. Louis, your husband studying at the seminary, and you landed this great opportunity here at the International Center of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. How has your career in the military helped you in your career here at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod International Center?
You know, I'm really amazed at the number of little points of overlap there have been.
Mm-hmm.
One of the areas that I work in is our prison ministry. And, you know, I've been a part of the legal system before.
Yeah.
And I've seen what people's lives are like right before they go
mm-hmm.
into an incarcerated situation sometimes. And I really have this sense that for some people, that time when they're finally away from all their outside influences and they're in prison, that's the first quiet moment in their life they've really had that they could have an opportunity to know Jesus.
Wow. What a gift to be able to do that. So you work in it, you work with prison ministry here and, mm-hmm. Which is part of the, Mercy Operations. What else is included in Mercy Operations?
We also have specialized pastoral ministries. So our institutional chaplains
mm-hmm.
and the deaconesses who serve as chaplains, some of our emergency service chaplains we work with, VA, that's the veterans
mm-hmm.
and, the prison chaplains for the federal system. We work with them and we're trying to set up some continuing education retreats. And a mm-hmm. lot of that continuing ed stuff is stuff that I handled as an attorney supervisor in the military. So I'm familiar with a lot of those event planning types of roles as well.
Well, what a blessing to us as the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod to have someone who has that background, who brings that skill set that that you were, you know, so fortunate, so blessed to receive that training, those skills and that experience, and now bring that here so that, as you said, to serve in settings where people get the opportunity to hear about Jesus, some for the very first time, some when they're, as you said, someone who's you know, about to be incarcerated and set apart from their regular surroundings, the regular mm-hmm. influences, and really get to hear that good news about Jesus and to see it to see it take effect on their hearts and for them to hear that good news. What a blessing, I'm sure, to see that all come together.
Yeah.
Looking back over your military career, and serving as, you know, now a veteran, you know, looking back over your military career, any other blessings that you see that have come out of it?
Well, I think just being surrounded, I mean, as I am now here in this building, being surrounded with a team of people who believe in the goals that we've set,
mm-hmm.
That's something that you don't get at every other job out there.
Sure.
You know, there are a lot of jobs that people are working because of the paycheck. And so it's really nice to share a goal with people you work with and to have it be something that everybody in the room believes in. So.
It does. It does make a difference. And I can, you know, here at Worldwide KFUO, all about being the messenger of good news, telling the good news of Jesus. And it's nice to be on a team where everybody is on board with that. Everybody supports that and working toward that goal together. I hear what you're saying. It's nice to be a part of that team because it makes it so much easier to get up in the morning and go to work and to do what God has given you to do when you know that you're working with others who share that same, that common goal. What a blessing that is.
Absolutely.
I want to talk just briefly. We've got a couple minutes left in the segment. You mentioned your daughters earlier, you know, the blessings that you received while you were, I think, headed to California or and in California as well. How old are your daughters now?
I have three teenage girls right now.
Oh, bless you. What, in reflecting on, you know, as they've grown up in a military family and now a seminary family, what are their thoughts on that, on their life as military kids and now seminary kids?
You know, there were a few years when they were first, you know, in school and old enough to realize that they moved around more than some other families did. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful that one of the last places we lived near the D.C. area, they saw other kids move in and out of the neighborhood so that were not connected with the military at all. So they were finally in a big enough place to sort of see that, you know, hey, other families move mm-hmm. too. We're not totally weird in that. And so I think that helps them to understand that moving is a part of life and mm-hmm. change is a part of life. And I mean, we had our kids kind of close together on purpose. So it's very nice that they're friends with each other. Mm-hmm. And so we're probably more tightly knit as a family because of the fact that we've moved them all around. But
which lends itself to seminary life as well.
Yes.
So now you're here in the St. Louis area. They're in school here and they kind of settled in for the time being, knowing that change lies ahead as well with seminary. Now, what year is your husband studying or in seminary?
He's actually overstayed just a little bit. you know, back before the shot clock, there was the old four corners offense in basketball, and we're playing a little stall. You know, he's finishing up his classes at the end of winter quarter.
Okay.
And the really only change we made to his schedule is he took summers off because that's a great time to spend with our kids.
Sure.
And that way he did not need to be called at the end of the past school year. If we had moved this summer, we would have moved a daughter going into her senior year, one going into sophomore year, and an eighth grader. And so by stalling, you know, the eighth grader gets to finish, the senior mm-hmm. gets to graduate, and, you know, it's a better situation for at least two of them. So
a senior. So what are your daughter who's a senior, what are her plans for next year? What is she thinking?
She's lived a lot of places, and gosh, the weather in California was nice, Andy.
So back to California, it sounds like.
Back to California, yeah. She'll be in at Concordia in Irvine.
what a great blessing. And that's great that she'll... And now, is she thinking military possibly at all?
I think she is probably more interested in just first her chemistry degree, and then she may be thinking about med school. So
wow. Well, good for her.
Yeah.
Well, that is just great stuff. Any families listening today and who are maybe in military now, maybe husband and wife that are both in military or maybe just one spouse in military, with about a minute left, any words of advice or words of wisdom for those families?
Well, something that helps you as you face change, you know, giving your kids warning, you know, surprise is not a good thing when it comes to change, but then as you're telling them, remembering that God loves your kids more than you do. Mm. And so the best is going to come for your family if you can put your faith in that.
Amen. Trusting that the Lord in his great wisdom has good plans for all of his children, including you. Yeah. Well, we have been talking with Lori May, who is retired from the U.S. Air Force, now serving as administrative assistant to the Associate Executive Director of Mercy Operations here at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Lori, it's been great having you in the studio here talking with us today, and we've got a great guest lined up in just a little bit as well. So thanks for being our guest today, Lori.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
Coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk with Deaconess Kim Shave about her career in the military as well. Stick around.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
A good friend of mine is Melissa Oden, and she has an unusual adoption story for this week of special adoption programming during National Adoption Awareness Month. Melissa survived a late-term salt poison abortion procedure. She had many challenges as a very premature baby, but miraculously, she survived unscathed. A family opened their hearts and home to Melissa, where she flourished with her forever family. She's now married with a child of her own. Sadly, society often sends the message abortion is more humane than making an adoption plan for your baby. Adoption's an alternative to abortion that both the mother and child can live with. Visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org for more information about Melissa and her organization. You'll also find lots of resources regarding adoption.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Get ready for Giving Tuesday, December 3rd, when people around the world will join in making gifts to their favorite charities. Make a gift to the LCMS Global Mission Fund. Your gift will have an impact felt around the world and be used exclusively to support the Church's Witness, Mercy, Life Together efforts. To witness to God's Word and share the mercy of Christ, make your gift at lcms.org/givingtuesday.
Did you know that you can support KFUO Radio with your Thrivent Choice dollars? Thrivent Choice lets you recommend where some of Thrivent Financial's charitable outreach funds go by directing your choice dollars. Call 800-847-4836 and say Thrivent Choice, or visit thrivent.com/choicedollars for information on how you can support KFUO Radio with your choice dollars.
Hi, I'm Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark from Ascension Lutheran in St. Louis.
And I am Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky from St. Paul's in New Athens and Trinity in Darmstadt, and we welcome you to listen to Wrestling with the Basics.
Matt, let go of me, man. No, it's not real wrestling. We're just talking about Bible issues.
No.
Oh, 9:05 Saturday mornings, 8:50 a.m. KFUO.
The nation's Roman Catholic bishops have elected Archbishop Joseph Kurtz of Kentucky to be their new president. Kurtz, who leads the Archdiocese of Louisville, was elected at a Baltimore meeting of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops.
One of the major challenges is what really our Holy Father has said over and over again, how can we warm hearts and heal wounds?
He succeeds New York Cardinal Timothy Dolan. A suburban Washington, D.C. school district has rejected a request for school holiday in observance of the Muslim holy day, Eid. Zainab Chowdhury is co-chair of the Equality for Eid Coalition.
The Muslim community in Montgomery County, they've been struggling to have this measure approved for over a decade now, and they've really been met with a lot of resistance.
In Washington, a coalition of lawmakers, immigrant rights activists, faith leaders, and labor officials are turning to fasting and prayer to enhance their call for comprehensive immigration reform. They vow daily demonstrations on the Capitol's doorstep. I'm Norman Hall.
Welcome back to Faith and Family, Wednesday, November 13th, 2013, 11:33 here in St. Louis. This week we are talking with veterans. Today we're focusing on our women who have served so faithfully. And what a great conversation with Lori May in the first segment. Our guest this part of the hour, Deaconess Kim Shave, serves in the Office of National Mission, Assistant Director, Office of National Mission. Kim, it's great to have you in the studio today.
Thanks, Andy. It's good to be here.
And not your radio debut. You've been our guest before. You just have all kinds of vocations and all kinds of great experiences. You were on our first Moms Roundtable, and it's about time to have another one pretty soon. We got to have another Moms Roundtable.
Yeah,
so
you were so much fun. I couldn't
you couldn't
not
say
come
no
back.
When I said,
that's
will
right.
you come be our guest? So you have now, you know, our last segment, we said from missiles to mercy. Lori, you know, worked in the Air Force and missiles operation and now serving in mercy operations. You kind of have a similar background, not necessarily missiles, but you were in the National Guard, mm-hmm. and now serve as a deaconess. What an interesting transition! What drew you to the National Guard?
College tuition, to be honest. It's funny when we look back. I have many friends and other colleagues who look back at those early mm-hmm. days, thinking like, "Oh, we're going to join for the purpose of getting college tuition and really selfish reasons." And it turned out to be something that was very beneficial to me, helped me grow up. And I had so many more benefits that came from it than I would have expected. And what mm-hmm. turned out to be perhaps selfish motives turned out to be, you know, great lifetime experience. It was life changing.
And Lori had a similar story. You know, she had a bachelor's degree and she wanted to study law. And it was the scholarship opportunity that drew her in. But out of it came such blessings. Mm-hmm. You know, not only did she get the education, but all this experience as well. Now, you went, I gather you saw a recruiter.
I did.
Well, how did that conversation go? And then how did that conversation go with your family?
It starts before the recruiter. I had initially tried to look at going into the Air Force and the Air National Guard, and there were no openings. Looked at that as a little more prestigious, and had a cousin who happened to be in this military police unit in the Army National Guard. Said, "Oh, you need to do this. You need to go Army. All we do, we go camp out in the field, you know, 1 week a month. It's so much fun. It's so easy." Thanks, cousin. That's not quite how it
all
turned out.
All we do is camp out in the field.
Yeah. So I ended up meeting with a recruiter, and you know, as recruiters often do, they talk you into it with this wonderful story about all these great things and you're going to see and do, the adventures that are before you. And sure enough, before I knew it, within a few months, I was on that bus to Cleveland and getting ready for processing out.
And so how did the conversation go at home?
At home. I knew this was going to come up, and I have to, hopefully my mother will not listen to this. Yes, I will admit to a little bit of a Fourth Commandment violation. I remember telling her about my thoughts and planning on doing this. I basically told her I had already talked with a recruiter and was planning on moving ahead, and she just came back with this explanation that no daughter of mine is going into the Army or any military branch, and that would pretty much seal the deal. So sorry, Mom, if you're ever listening. If you had never said that, I probably would have never done it.
So it was merely out of rebellion, right?
Oh, well, I was insistent. There's a particular school that I'm known to have an allegiance for based on my college football preferences. I was determined to get there any way possible, and that seemed an expedient way to do it and have a little fun and adventure on the way.
And so, assuming your daughters are listening, what advice do you have to your daughters from that experience?
I am very careful with anything that they do not to outright just come out and say, no, no daughter of mine. I've learned to use a little more finesse in that regard. I think there are wonderful opportunities for women. I had wonderful opportunities, but those opportunities come with a bit of a price and there are challenges. So we've had some conversations here and there. And while I wouldn't be completely opposed to it, I'd be very careful to strongly caution them about mm-hmm. what they would be dealing with and what that would mean in the way of transitioning into a vocation later as wife and mother. And fortunately for me, I was not in either one of those vocations during my time of service. I mm-hmm. made it back from, I had been deployed for Desert Storm over to Frankfurt, Germany for about 6 months and did my wedding planning overseas. So I made it back just within a couple weeks' time for my own wedding. And my role of wife in that vocation came for the most part after my service. So that's what I would probably want to see for them as well. There are definite challenges.
So you were deployed for Desert Storm?
I was. Just Frankfurt, Germany. Can't complain. More. The first couple months were rather difficult. We had 12, 13-hour days with full gear, looking at the terrorist threat and making sure that we were, as I was a military police officer, so we had security duty and we were overseeing the security for a very high-level officer housing complexes, the post exchange, the PX, where all the families mm-hmm. and other military members would shop for their goods. And that particular PX in Frankfurt had been bombed in several years before the time that we were there. So it was a very large security threat. And then we had other military members or housing complexes. We were in charge of security for that as well as the Army headquarters area. So we were all over the place doing some interesting things.
You got to do some interesting things. What did you learn? What did you gain while you were there?
Well, I learned about sacrifice and service, that's for sure. And I still remember that day, just what patriotism was all about. But I still remember that first day. I had just gotten down to Fort McClellan, Alabama, and that post is no longer open anymore. But that first day, just being brainwashed in basic training with different military patriotic music and songs, and Lee Greenwood's Proud to Be American. And they're just, you know, doing everything they can to get you all pumped up for this life of service you're about to endeavor upon and sacrifice. And it really helped you to realize what service is about and what it means to sacrifice yourself for the purpose of others. There's something larger at stake here, and that's our freedom and the wonderful way of life that we have here in the state. So I definitely learned to give of myself rather than to just serve myself.
And we don't experience that in every aspect of life, in our education, especially in American culture. Mm-hmm. We don't learn that along the way. We live in a very individualistic culture. For you to learn that through experience, and not just training, but through experience as well,
right?
A blessing, I'm sure, that shaped your future vocations. How can, and this is a little bit outside of the realm of our conversation and what you thought you were planning for today, but what are your thoughts on our young people today and preparing for vocations? You had this great experience. Probably didn't seem great at the time. Probably seemed really painful and difficult.
Parts of it were wonderful.
Probably seemed some of it, you know, as you said, you learned to live and serve, you know, for the sake of others. We don't necessarily get that in all of our experiences in our education and even our work experiences and things like that as young people today don't necessarily get that. Now, granted, I'm not discrediting young people and saying that they don't care about others. That's not the case at all. The culture that we live in encourages us to focus on ourselves and our own happiness. What can young people do from your perspective? You know, would you encourage young people to consider opportunities like what you had or similar opportunities? Anything you would encourage them to look at to get that perspective that you have?
Well, I think so. I'm reminded, geez, even the throughout the marketing techniques that the military would employ through the years, I remember that shift when the Army's new tagline was an army of one. They realized that they had to change to deal with mm-hmm. the culture and to attract the culture and young people to come into the military, because they just didn't have that same sense of understanding at a certain point. And I don't think necessarily the training has changed. It's still about breaking down and building back up to be able to work cohesively as a team. But I think our young people are very gifted. I would in no way, as much as a Christian, I've seen the decline in our culture, I would in no way want to put that on all youth. I think there are certainly wonderful people out there gifted mm-hmm. with what's needed to live a life of sacrifice and service that the military would ask for. But at the same time, if it was a young woman, I'd probably have a very different answer for her than I would a young man based on my own experience and
sure.
knowing the ages of my own children. It's just a very different environment, even in the 20 years that have passed since I served, just what's happened in the military and the impact that has on families mm-hmm. too.
Now, you mentioned your family. You mentioned that while you were deployed, you were planning, you spent some of that time planning your wedding.
Yes.
Coming back, and your wedding was how soon after you returned?
I think it was about 4 or 5 weeks. So I got back the end of June and my wedding was in August. So yeah, we had a few weeks and prayerfully, thankfully, the dress still fit. Didn't have to worry about that.
Now, when did you meet your fiance and now husband? When did you meet?
I had met Steve in June of the year that I was deployed. I had already been in the National Guard, I think 3 or 4 years at that point. We met in June. It was wonderful, wonderful man. It changed my outlook on so many things, one of which was my role as a woman and what that would mean in a marriage and how the military would impact that. And we were engaged in October. It was very quick. I knew this was the guy. Mm-hmm. I fell in love like instantaneously. and then we were planning our wedding for the following August, but it was in December of that year when I got the call to pack my bags and be ready within 3 days. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was quick.
Now, did Steve have any family in the military? Does he have any military background? What was his familiarity with military?
I don't think I would be speaking out of turn and saying he wasn't really completely pleased with my role, especially when I was pulled away like that. And some of the challenges that he really helped me through, being a woman serving in that type of a high stress environment, especially in those first couple months when we, the war with Saddam Hussein hadn't completely gone as we knew it would easily, you know, go our way after several weeks. So quite a few challenges being in that environment. And he really counseled me and coached me through a lot of them. So it was quite a challenge for him to deal with that, and being so far away in the process, seeing me hurt or upset or missing my family, my life as I knew it. So he experienced that with me and kind of counseled me through it.
And so you plan this wedding while you're deployed. You come back home a few weeks later and get married. Are you done with the military then? Or how much longer were you?
We ended up being in a situation where we had to relocate. And at first, I wasn't able to find another unit that would allow my MOS to transfer in. So I thought I was getting an early discharge. It didn't quite happen. They found a spot for me. So I served out my last year in an engineering unit doing more administrative work. And that worked out much better. And actually, it's interesting. At the time, I didn't think about it. I'll just say I probably wasn't near where I probably could have been in my faith life. But we, in my role with that subsequent unit, after I returned and was married, I was working with a chaplain and a chaplain's assistant, and it gave me a new understanding of the church's role in the military, which before that point I really hadn't thought of. I may have occasionally gone to the chapel service to get out of KP here and there and not necessarily had the most honest motives or intentions.
Isn't it interesting, though, how God uses those things to bring us to hear his word?
Right. Absolutely.
Now, at the time, a little bit of history on Steve here, your husband. What was he was studying, you said, and finishing up about the time you got married. Where was he in his education and career?
Right. He was just finishing up his bachelor's degree at The Ohio State University,
which
is what led me to join the military, to be able to go there. and he was finishing up and graduated, and I missed his graduation. I didn't make it home in time. And he was starting a new position, his first job out of college. He's a second career pastor. He's gone back and become a pastor about 7 years ago. So his role was working with a bank, working in an IT area with a computer engineering degree. So he had no idea at that point where God would be leading him many years later either.
Mm-hmm. And then eventually you all ended up at seminary.
Yes.
You are a deaconess. Which came first, pastor, deaconess, or at the same time? How did that process go?
Honestly, I had never heard of a deaconess until I was at the seminary, sadly, and I do what I can now to make sure that doesn't happen to other people by getting the word out. There was a new deaconess program. Steve was already a seminarian, and there was a new deaconess program. I started to go to SemWives classes, and the sainted Kurt Marquardt and Dr. Geish, and I give them all the credit because I was so intrigued with this Lutheran theology that I had never studied before or really knew that much about. Started to read a little more Luther, and then I heard about this new deaconess program on campus at Fort Wayne, and I thought, wow, this sounds really cool. And I prayed about it and figured out a way that to kind of break the news to Steve that I was thinking about this. We were already a poor seminary family. How are we going to take on that?
Could we be any poorer?
I know. Exactly. And the wonderful, supportive spouse that he is, he understood that I sensed that this was something God was calling me to do, and it just sort of worked out. But it's funny, in those first months especially, we were so nervous about being on campus with the guys. They, you know, were questioning our motives. Were they trying to become women pastors, or what is this deaconess thing? And I was so afraid to let anyone know about my military experience. I thought that would just be so badly received. Or
she was in the military, now she's going to seminary.
Yeah. Funny, anyone who knows me and my view on women pastors would laugh about that. But anyway, so yeah, it was a progression, and I had never heard of a deaconess, and it just turned out to just fit very nicely with my new understanding of Lutheran theology and my approach to service and wanting to help others. And oh boy, has that military experience translated, especially to the work I did in the Ohio district with disaster response and some of the riot control training and others. Granted, that never really came into play after some of the disasters I responded to, but as we're looking
at what's... Could be handy here at the International Center.
Well, yeah, that's funny. Keeping people in the Office of National Mission in line, following those rules, it does come in handy.
You work with Pastor Bart Day, so...
I do, yeah.
That military background...
Try to keep him in line.
Really helpful.
Exactly.
So then you served as... Steve went through seminary, and you went through the deaconess program at the seminary, and where did you go from there? You said you served in the Ohio district?
Mm-hmm. Before that, though, he had received a call as a mission planter, which is so interesting the way that military experience factors into what God would plan later. We were down in Warner Robins, Georgia for his vicarage and his and my internship. And Warner Robins, everything is focused in that community around Robins Air Force Base, which is the second largest employer in the whole state of Georgia. So it was an Air Force base. So we had an opportunity to plant a new mission congregation with different transplants from the north, with a military base being the hub of all things happening there. We had wonderful people that were coming in and looking for a Lutheran church, and there was one in Warner Robins already, but they wanted to plant one a little bit south of there in what's called Perry, Georgia. So it was a wonderful opportunity to get to know some wonderful military families and the deployments that were happening with the current situation in Afghanistan, and just being able to understand a little bit better what the wives were going through, or the husbands in some cases, which I would have not had that understanding had I not served myself. And it was just very helpful to know how to better minister to them as a deaconess, I should say, and for my husband as a pastor to minister to them based on his own experience of my deployment. So,
and that answers my other question. You know, what are some of the blessings that have come out of your military career and now being a veteran? What are some of the blessings that have come out of that for your other vocations?
Well, for one thing, it helped me grow up and look beyond myself and look to others. And that's probably the biggest blessing out of it. I think being able to be a part of something that's the patriotism and the camaraderie and the teamwork that goes with that is just such a blessing that I still carry with me today. And I think about some of my first exposure to leaders, and then having been, you know, put on in places where I had to lead myself, where I would have never expected to do that as an 18-year-old, very shy, kind of quiet kid, and being put in a position to, we trained alongside men, and we had a platoon of women. I was put in charge of that platoon at times, and I just learned about leadership in ways that I probably couldn't have otherwise, because you have no choice. You do it. Your drill sergeant says do it, and you do it. So, yeah. And I think today, too, it just gives me a better understanding of sacrifice and appreciation for our veterans, knowing we just celebrated Veterans Day on Monday, and the type of homecoming that I received wasn't always there when I think about our Vietnam vets and and others. And I'm just so thankful that our country has embraced our veterans and the work that they're doing in service. And I think that's just helpful. And I love being able to instill that in my children and taking them to parades and helping them appreciate the service of men and women to our country.
I think our perspective certainly has changed over the last few years, over the last, you know, couple of decades. You're right.
It wasn't
there when they came home from Vietnam.
Right,
that appreciation wasn't there. That was an unfortunate situation of the times,
an unfortunate
mindset. But you're right. Now, I think our perspective is a little bit better. We're thankful. We're still human. We're still sinners. We're never going to truly understand the sacrifices that our military make, and especially that their families make, you know, to be home and trying to hold the fort down while knowing that their loved ones are risking their lives day by day, wherever they're serving, even when they're serving here at home.
Absolutely.
You know, they're still risking their lives for the sake of others.
Right.
Now you serve in the Office of National Mission. And we were joking about having, you know, having that military police background and how helpful that is. Now that you serve in the Office of National Mission, any connection between the two, the things that you gained in your military career, what are you doing in the Office of National Mission? What is your work there?
Well, right now our focus with what's happening in the Philippines, why there's some crossover with the Office of National Mission. We have our Office of International Mission, our Office of National Mission, and then we have the Mercy Operations that sort of bridges both. Mm-hmm. So being supportive of the guys, so to speak, that are getting ready to deploy our...
Which includes...
Yeah. Well, my husband, but then Ross Johnson, who is just installed this morning, who has somewhat recently returned from his deployment in Afghanistan, had been in the military. So
right. And we had tried to get him lined up for to be a guest this week, but
he's gone.
Yeah, I knew once I heard what was going. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think where I can support them, I remember telling Pastor Day in my interview, he asked, if there's one ministry area in O&M that you're interested in, what would that be? And I said, Pastor Day, you know, if disaster strikes, you're going to have a tough time keeping me in this chair. That's just really where my heart is, to go out and reach out with a diaconal sort of ministry to those people. Half of the people that are affected by disasters are going to be women and children, and that's really where a deaconess has been trained to to respond with the love and mercy of Christ. And so I've just been very blessed in my work with the Ohio District responding to disasters, understanding what's involved in those chaotic, crazy times when you have first responders and emergency responders coming together. And a lot of what I learned in the military translated to how that works even now in these types of situations. And we are leading the charge in the LCMS, I think, in our fantastic response to disasters. And I just feel very blessed to be able to support that.
Yeah, I was, you know, obviously very saddened to see what happened in the Philippines.
Absolutely.
The other day.
It's just heartbreaking.
But at the same time, to see the response that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is taking to and kind of leading the charge among the ILC, the International Lutheran Council, and the other our partner Lutheran churches around the world,
right.
You know, kind of leading that charge to say,
right.
we're ready to be the hands of mercy, the hands of Christ in, mm-hmm. in this situation, and bring the good news of Jesus, to bring Christ's mercy to these people,
mm-hmm.
In this time of devastation.
Right.
It was even though sad to see that disaster, it was nice to see that we're a part of this church body that's ready to bring this good news of Jesus wherever it's needed.
Absolutely. I think compassion and the love of Christ that we've received and his own mercies just motivate us to want to go and share that with others. And beyond just looking mm-hmm. at the spiritual needs of individuals, we look at their bodily needs as well. And these are just really great opportunities to bring comfort and peace to them. President Harrison had preached a wonderful sermon this morning on the occasion of Pastor Johnson's installation, and just about some of the things that he has seen in the past too. And it just brings tears to your eyes about the devastation and what these children and parents, men and women alike, are experiencing. And they already were falling upon hard times and were struggling to survive and exist. And then you have this calamity put on top of that. It's just devastating. And we can't as Christians do anything else but respond.
In mercy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
In the mercy that God has shown us,
right.
that we can bring to them. Reflecting on your military career now, I know that, as serving as a woman, it brings its challenges. It has its challenges, its questions. You obviously sound grateful for the experience that you've had. Joys or blessings that have come out of it. You've mentioned how the skills that you've had and the experiences you've had have helped you in your current vocations. Any other joys or blessings that have come out of it?
Well, it's been fun just with the advent of Facebook. I had lost touch with many of the people that I had served with in my unit from Toledo, Ohio, and it's been fun with Facebook to get back in touch with some of these people and see how they've come along in their lives, and to even see some similar experiences in life that they've experienced that I have too that could be devastating, but you see their faith now where you didn't know people well enough, or they may mm-hmm. have been where I was, where I wasn't going to openly talk about my faith at the time I was serving. I was a kid. I really didn't know what I believed, but to be connected with them now, it's been really fun. And they've even put together some Facebook pages where we get together and comment and post old pictures, and just to see where people have come and how they've served and some of the crises and challenges that they've had in their lives too, to be able to come to them now in a different way as a Christian and provide the comfort that only comes from God and his word. It's been a big blessing. Granted, it's through the internet. It's, mm-hmm. you know, cyber spiritual care, I guess you could say, but it's still that opportunity that you have, that camaraderie from 20 plus years ago that's still there when you get back in touch with people. So it's been great.
With about a minute left, your advice to the young lady who is in the military, looking at that next chapter in life, your thoughts on that for that young lady in the military now?
Sure. I think we have to look, especially if you're looking at this through the Christian faith or the Christian lens, is to look at your vocation that God has given you as your service in the military. Look at your vocation as wife, perhaps mother, or whatever else that may be, and really clearly think through what those challenges could be. Go to your chaplain. By all means, we have some wonderful chaplains, especially serving the LCMS. Use them. They're there for you, and let them help you through some of your challenges. And they're great. I know they are, more so than when I was in 20 years, but God will use your service to bless you and others. But just remember to turn to him and keep him at the forefront of all that you do.
Amen. Well, we've been talking with Deaconess Kim Shea from the Office of National Mission here at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and from the Army, from the National Guard. So thanks so much for being with us and for your service, Kim.
Thank you. You're most welcome.
Coming up next right here on Worldwide KFUO, Moments of Assurance. Next week, we're going to kick off, yes, time to start talking about the seasons right around the corner. Yeah, time to start talking about Advent, ways to prepare for those seasons of the church year. So great stuff here on Faith and Family. Like I said, Moments of Assurance up next right here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.